Hi, we're here to do the draw for Wharf and Feather. I'm Audrey McLean, and I am here with Mummy because we are going to do the draw. The people have entered from commenting what they would want from if they won the contest in Mummy's post. And now I will do the draw. Oh, by the way, Mummy's here too.
Hello.
And now for the draw. And now I'm shaking it. And the winner is, by the way, my eyes are closed. And the winner is, Mama's Epic Kitchen.
Mama's Epic Kitchen.
Oh, that's what it says, really?
Angela Lim.
That's real. Is that actually what it says?
That's what it says. Let's say congratulations.
Yay!
Send me a DM on Instagram, Angela Lim, and I will hook you up with your gift card. Welcome to UBU Pod. Here you'll meet incredible people who tell us about their rich and interesting lives, of being visible, of working through challenges, and of coming out the other side. There's so much power in people's stories, and as a curious person, I love finding out how people tick. I'm your host, Megan Hamilton. I'm a speaking, visibility, and confidence coach, and I help you be you. Welcome to another edition of UBU Pod. I am so excited to have Christy Sumer here with me today. Christy is the founder and CEO of Encircled, a line of innovative, sustainable, and versatile women's wear based in Toronto and retailed exclusively online. A former management consultant who virtually lived in airports, Christy started Encircled with the dream of helping women do more with less in their wardrobes. I love that idea. Frustrated with the lack of versatile and stylish travel clothing, she started designing it. With no fashion background and little capital, she launched her online store in 2012. Today, Encircled has a beautiful studio in the Junction Triangle area of Toronto, a team of 14, and makes all of its clothing within 60 kilometers of their studio. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm so happy you're here too. So I love the idea that, you know, you sort of got frustrated by, I mean, we've all been there, right? We want to travel with our carry-ons. We want to be able to travel sort of lightly. But when we think about all the things we typically need to bring for whatever we're doing, you know, it ends up being so bulky. And I love the idea that you wanted to create versatile, but also like fun, fashionable items. And so how did this even start for you with no, you know, background in fashion? Suddenly you're designing stuff. How did that start?
Yeah. I mean, it really just started with an idea. So I had been working and consulting for, I think maybe about a year at the time. And I was packing for a yoga retreat and I was in consulting. Like, you have a time when you're working and then a time when you're on the beach, they call it, when you're not, or on the bench, you're not assigned to a client. So you're essentially like a nomad, like you don't have a client. So you're like, you don't have much work to do. So like, you can either do like kind of office work stuff, or they encourage you to take vacations at that time. So I'm like, well, I'm going to take a vacation. My friend had a last minute like yoga retreat. Yeah, she had a spot in her yoga retreat open up literally like 3 days prior. And I was like, I've never been on a yoga retreat. You know, I'm going to try this out. This sounds great. So I started packing for the yoga retreat. I had this huge suitcase because I was bringing like a mat and blocks and all the things. And I had no idea what to bring because I'd never been on one. So I just was typically overpacking. And then I was closing my bag. It was probably like 2 or 3 in the morning and I was flying out at 7 a.m. And my suitcase ripped and the zipper split. And I was like, oh no, this is not fixable. I'm in a bit of a pickle here. So my only other bag was the carry-on that I traveled with for work. And I'm like, oh, I guess I'm gonna have to take this. So I started like going through everything I was bringing, and I was like questioning it. I was like, why am I bringing this? What is the purpose of this? And I realized I was bringing like all this clothes for like the plane. Like I was bringing like a cardigan and like a scarf and all this stuff. And I was like, why am I bringing all this stuff? I'm only gonna wear it on the plane. Like, this is ridiculous. So I was like, what if I had a piece that I could wear as like a cardigan and a scarf, and then I could wear it maybe even as a dress when I was there. And so I started like dreaming up this idea of like a multifunctional, basically like circle scarf that would, you know, you would easily be able to construct these looks without looking like it was a scarf, essentially. So that idea really stuck with me during the yoga retreat. And then when I came back, I was still obsessed with it. So I started figuring out how to actually create a product, basically.
Wow. I mean, I think that's so interesting to think that now here you are, and you are running a team of 14 for a fashion brand, mm-hmm. right? It's so neat how that started. And what got you interested and passionate about sustainable clothing and slow fashion?
Yeah, I think I've always had a really big interest in sustainability. You know, as a kid, probably around age 11 or 12, I became a vegetarian, which was very unusual in the 90s. That was not a thing.
Yep.
you know, and one of the reasons was because I was very compassionate towards animals. And I was starting to understand some of the environmental impacts of, you know, meat and stuff like that. So, and also like, I don't know, I've just always had this interest in it. Like I often tell the story about how I was in high school, I was like an athlete and stuff like that, but I was also in like the recycling club. Like there was a recycling club and I was in it, and I would go into the school in the morning and sort paper into different buckets because you couldn't recycle back in the day. You had to separate colors of paper to recycle them, which is insane now.
Yeah. I remember that. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm super aging myself right now, but
me too.
Yeah. So I definitely had an interest, and I always loved like following what was happening with like Greenpeace. And I always wanted to save the animals, and saving the animals is like very connected to the earth and the environment and stuff like that. So I think throughout that, I just really started to really understand that there was a connection between products, the environment. I found an essay the other day I wrote in university on human rights and labor and fashion, which was so interesting because I was studying business.
Right.
And the fact that I was talking about that was so interesting. So I think I just had a lot of like, I've always been somebody who likes to fight for the underdog. And in the fashion industry, the underdog is really the people who are being exploited by most of these fast fashion brands, mm-hmm. who are, you know, basically using their labor and paying them unfair wages, working them crazy hours and treating them horribly and putting them in health and safety risk situations to get a $10 t-shirt. So I knew if I created a business that I wanted it to feel really good from the inside out. I didn't just want to create a great product, but I wanted to create a really great holistic approach to creating a garment. And so that for sure at the beginning, table stakes involved using like sustainable fabric and ethical local manufacturing, which at the time, you know, sustainability was not trendy. Right now it's like in every ad you see, but nobody was talking about it. People thought it was so weird and they did not get it.
Right.
But, you know, I was really passionate about it. And I also wanted to make some like clothing that had that idea of no compromise. So like, there's a lot of stigmas around, sustainability and fashion that it has to be like hemp or something like that. And I wanted to show that there's a more luxurious side to sustainability. Like there's some really beautiful fabrics out there that are amazing to wear and really long lasting and drape beautifully, but they're sustainable. And it just really requires being more intentional with your clothing purchases because oftentimes these fibers are more expensive, but it's definitely worth it. So yeah, I think it's just always been kind of wrapped into my ethos as a person and just started to manifest itself in this business specifically.
I love it. And so, you know, certainly you had the chops to get a business going because you got your MBA from Queens. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And so a lot of people who are listening today are from the Kingston area, which is where I'm at. And we're very familiar with, I don't think it was called Smith back then. I think was it just the School of Business?
I think it was called the Smith School of Business when I was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was. Okay. So, okay. So here we are and we're starting a business. And what? We can never really know what we're in for, right? But how, like, what did you envision it was going to be like, and what is it like now?
Yeah, it's definitely different. So I don't think I had, like, you know, what you often see today with, like, businesses, at least the ones that I see, is people come out of the gate, they graduate from, like, a top school, like a Queens or a Harvard or something like that. And they come out and they've got this idea and they pitch it to investors, and investors write them checks, you know, for their pitch deck, and they have no revenue. And then all of a sudden they're this huge business and they've got this mission, this like Apple Steve Jobs like mission. I did right. not start in Circled like that. Like, I really just had a product and I had an idea of how to make it and make a brand that would feel good. And, you know, I think I thought at the beginning that, you know, this is my way to travel and live like a freedom lifestyle. Like, I'm just going to make this product. It's somehow going to make itself and ship itself. And I'm going to quit my job, you know, become, you know, super independently wealthy and travel the world and do good things. And
that sounds really good.
It sounds amazing. That is actually not what happened. No, spoiler alert. I haven't had a vacation in 2.5 years. But that's largely due to the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely manifested into a different type of business. And I think that's just because of the way the business is built. Like, it's not, you know, a lot of those businesses where people have that kind of freedom lifestyle, they're like drop shipping businesses where they're not involved in the product. Like, we're right. super involved with everything that happens. Like, when you create a product, or even people who buy and resell products, like, you know, when you're creating a product from end to end, from choosing the fabrics to designing it and fitting it and then making it and testing it, like, it's such a big process. So it requires a lot of hands-on involvement. That's why we do have such a big team. But it is definitely, like, you know, hitting a moment, I would say now in the last probably couple of years, where I do have a team. So, you know, provided we're not in the pandemic, you know, when things are a little bit more settled, you know, there is more freedom to do kind of what I want and travel and achieve those goals. But it's definitely not, like, I didn't picture myself running like a corporation. And that's essentially what I'm doing. And that's essentially what happens when you have a small business and they grow up. But you know, right. you have yep. the choice to, like, make it how you want to make it, you know. So if you want to, you know, run that Steve Jobs, Apple type corporation, you can raise lots of money and hire 50 people or whatever. It just depends on what everybody wants out of it and what kind of involvement and lifestyle they want, I think, is really important to define for yourself. And then you can make a business that will suit that.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, you know, when I don't know what business this is for me now, but it's probably like 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. And setting out ahead of time to, you know, really, really dreaming up, what do I want this to look like? What, you know, what are my boundaries? Setting that stuff ahead of time can really help you moving forward if you know what your sort of key points are that you want to keep sort of sacred for yourself moving forward with your business, depending on how it grows. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about your philosophy of, you know, compassion towards animals and sustainability and the environment, how does that translate into your leadership role, leading a team of 14 people? Because, you know, if you started off with you're designing, you know, your product and you're starting to get ideas, and now all of a sudden, what are we, 11 or 7 years later, something like that?
It's actually nine.
Nine. Okay.
Yeah.
Math is for 11 a.m. and beyond.
That's okay.
You know, how does that feel to be leading a team of folks?
Yeah, I mean, the thing maybe that's a bit different about me versus some of, like, the entrepreneurs just coming out of school and starting a business is that, like, I had a career before right. the business. So, like, I was hitting, like, you know, the peak of my career probably when I quit my job, to be honest, much to the chagrin of my parents and family. Like, I had gotten this, you know, finance degree and an MBA and then gotten into my dream job of management consulting, which was my dream job coming out of undergrad. So it took me a number of years to even get into that industry. you know, and probably making the highest salary I've ever made. And then I decided to leave it all, which is absurd in retrospect, looking back. And now I understand why people were so shocked by that decision. But, you know, so I was leading pretty big teams in my corporate career. Like at one point I was seconded on a client, a retailer out West. And, you know, I was sitting in a position of associate vice president in their e-commerce. So I had a team of like almost 45 direct and indirect reports. So I'd led teams before. What's different, I think, when it's your own business is that you're much more personally tied to the results of the business, I think, in a lot of ways, because you're an owner. And oftentimes it's your money involved in the business. So anything you do, you feel like really, you just feel more stressed out about it. Like if somebody like ruins a batch of leggings because they like accidentally gave the factory the wrong fabric, like you're like, you know, in a normal business where you're not the owner or operator of it, you might be like, oh, that's a big mistake. Let's talk about what happened. Da, da, da. But then in your own business, you're like, oh my God, you just wasted $10,000. Like what is, you know, you're so much more emotionally connected to the mistakes and errors, which do happen. So it creates a different environment for management. So I think you have to be really mindful with your process for management. I try to definitely embrace a lot of the things that I think worked well in corporate, but not all of them, because I don't think everything that happens in corporate is great. I think it creates a lot of bureaucracy that's unnecessary in meetings. But definitely want communication and stuff like that. Like I try and implement processes around that to make sure that the team feels seen and that they're getting coaching from me as well.
Okay. I love that. To be mindful of it. Cause yeah, I mean, I just came from, Queen's the faculty, and bureaucracy was quite it was a huge part of working in such a large environment, and so and I'm not there anymore. I mean, I quit my very they call it the golden handcuffs, my you know, very secure job at Queen's, where I had a pension and benefits and all kinds of things like that, just in the middle of the pandemic. But I think, that's what's always interesting about entrepreneurs is there's a fire, there's like a passion, there's a belief in yourself that you can do it, right? When you take those sort of like large scale risks. And I think that whatever that is, that fire, that desire to, you know, it's almost like a competition with yourself where you keep like wanting to expand and wanting to, you know, like beat last year's goals or at least reach this year's goals. There's something, you know, very powerful about the energy that comes from behind that. And, you know, it's exciting to be around folks like that. You know, one of the things that I love about a post that you wrote at some point in the last month or two was, you know, different ways that you can practice sustainable fashion or, you know, like be conscious. And one of them was wear your clothes. And I was just like, of course, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, okay, well, because I have to keep buying so much clothing, now I'm going to, you know, be more mindful of it. And it's like, hold on a second. Do you like, do you actually have to buy another black cardigan? How many do you have? Like, I remember one point I had like six of them and they all had a very slight differences, but I don't need six black cardigans. I mean, I thought I did. And what are the ways? And there's another, it was such a great, it was another Instagram post and I can't remember who posted it, but it was like, you know, we all want to talk about sustainability and choosing environmentally sustainable products, but here's something that we should talk about. How about use what you already have? Or are we all not ready to have that conversation? Right. And the, you know, the greenwashing, I think, is a phrase I've heard tossed around. I think I've even seen you using it by businesses. You talked about how it's trendy right now to be sustainable. What are some of the ways that we can not be duped? Like, mm-hmm. what are some of the key things that we can look for so that we know that we are investing in something, you know, that aligns with our beliefs versus that is just trying to get us off guard.
Mm-hmm. Greenwashing is such a hot topic. I talk about it a lot on my Instagram because, again, it is, if you look in the trends, Google Trends, sustainable fashion is trending. So you bet really? That like wow. every retailer is trying to figure out how they can, you know, glom onto that trend, not actually be sustainable because it's the right thing to do. So that's like the first thing. If you start seeing a brand doing it just because
right.
like it's trendy, that's like a big red flag for sure. Because like people should be doing, these are the things that brands should be acting in integrity with and probably should have done, you know, 20 years ago, probably, to be honest, but even 5 years ago. But if they're doing it now, I'm just like, you know, I think it was, who was it launched a sustainable collection recently and the internet got all over them. I think it was like Boohoo or one of those brands that's like a fast fashion brand. And people were all over them and all the influencers who they partnered with to promote their quote unquote sustainable collection. Because at the end of the day, a lot of these fast fashion brands can never be sustainable. And one of the reasons why is because their business model ties into consumption, which is something you just highlighted. So I think there's a balance between like never shop again and, you know, wear your closet and, you know, purchase mindfully and, you know, the alternative, which is fast fashion, which is, you know, Shein, who launches 1,000 pieces a day, 1,000 new styles a day. You know, that's, we do one
I
a
can't
month.
Even like, I can't.
Like,
I, you know, one a month versus 1,000 a day.
So that's like 30,000 a month.
That's
new styles. That's not like even like product produced. You know, they're probably producing, I don't know, 30 million pieces of product, and their product is very cheap. It's all, there's been like articles out about slave labor in their supply chain, not surprisingly. They're not using sustainable materials. And this is clothing built to fall apart because when you pay that much and do a design that quickly, you know, it's probably not going to fit properly, but people who pay $8 don't care because they get it and they're like, doesn't fit. I'm just going to donate it because it was only $8. So like, there's this weird consumption cycle that fast fashion, like the H&M, Zara's, all of them participate in to varying degrees. Some of them look a little bit more luxury with their marketing, like Zara looks like it, but they're all using the same supply chain. So you can't be fooled by that. So I think fast fashion to me is like an out. If you're trying to be sustainable, do not shop with them because their business model is not sustainable. They rely on high volume, which is the absolute antithesis of what sustainable fashion should be. It should be more mindful and slow consumption. So to me, they're out. If you see a fast fashion brand saying they're conscious, they're not. Not only are they producing at a high volume, maybe they're using organic cotton, which is a step, but they're also using slave labor probably to make that. So it's not that great. So what else can people look for? So I think the biggest thing is certification. So Encircle is a certified B Corporation. That's a big one where they look at, you know, your business throughout its supply chain, how you pay your employees to, you know, your benefits programs, to your purchasing, to the materials you're using, your environmental impact and output. It's a very difficult certification to get. There's not that many companies in the world that have it. I think there's only a couple thousand. Not very many apparel retailers have it either. So I think that's a good certification, or anything around like the fabrics and materials or supply chain certifications like Fair Trade certified, or, you know, there's a lot of Ercotex is like a fabric certification or Blue Sign to be free of like chemicals, GOT certified organic cottons. Then, you know, the supply chain for the cotton is clean because a lot of cotton is also associated with slave labor and a lot of environmental impact that's very negative. So mm-hmm. I think looking for those certifications, because, you know, there's a lot of, one thing that's also very trendy right now is recycled polyester. You know, you'll see brands talking about it and saying like, oh, these leggings are made from 10 water bottles, or it's been pretty trendy for a while. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a big issue with that supply chain because there's not enough recycled bottles to actually recycle for new water bottles. So new water bottles are having to be made from like new material because there's this whole burgeoning enterprise of like the models going to make in the pants. It's just like, how did this happen? This is such a mess. So they have to be certified. Like, so there's a lot, it's a lot for a consumer. And I'm sure people listening to this are like, oh my God, I have heard enough. But it is important to become educated. So just like we've all become more educated about our food source and what's in our beauty products, like it's time to become more educated about our clothing, who made it, what goes into it. And as soon as you see that, like watch The True Cost. It's a little old, this documentary from Netflix, but it's still relevant. And actually the problem still exists. So definitely still timely, and just start to learn more and ask brands question about where they're making their clothing and from what.
I love it. That is helpful. And you would imagine that, you know, any company who is going to go through the laborious and expensive process of getting certified is going to have it front and center on their website, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be pretty easy to see right off the bat if one of these companies is practicing what they preach. Okay, on that, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back in just one moment. Hey, are you a business owner? How many times have you been asked, tell me about your business? And you stumble through some kind of awkward answer. It's just this little thing that I do. Sound familiar? You want to be able to enthusiastically and confidently talk about your business. You want to be able to say yes to conferences. You want to be able to show up in videos, but you keep putting it off for another day, which becomes a month, which becomes a year. It's still on your to-do list, but it's now on page 7 underneath redo bookkeeping procedures. Well, now you can bring this back to page 1 because I've developed an exciting business growing program just for you. Welcome to Thriving Visibility, a 3-month program for ethical business owners who want to be a passionate, authentic figurehead for their business, who want enthusiasm and excitement without the bullshit, who want to be able to express themselves on the outside how they feel on the inside. If this sounds like you, head over to ubuskills.com and submit an application for Thriving Visibility. We start in January of 2022. And we're back. So we are here talking with Christy Sumer, and she's just given us such great advice as to how to start educating ourselves to make choices towards more sustainable fashion and how to choose the companies that we want to where we want to invest. I always think about it, you know, when I spend money on different things, I like to think of it as an investment. And so, you know, you want your investment to be clean on all ends. And so are you investing in something that is also going to be, you know, helping to sustain everything around you? Does it make you feel good as a person about, you know, where your product, whatever it happens to be, is coming from? And it's one of the reasons I love Instagram so much, is because I follow folks whose, you know, products or services I'm interested in. And then I get a sense for whether or not our values align and if that's a place where I want to make investments, i.e., you know, spend my money. And Christy, I wanted to talk to you about, and this is something that, you know, a lot of my listeners are going to be interested in as well, visibility and leadership. Because, you know, when you started your company, did you ever imagine that you would be sort of, you know, doing Instagram reels or any of the other things that come now with being a figurehead for a larger company?
Oh my gosh, no. No. So I was just like in my last part of the career, like I would say I've always been, I am an extrovert who is very introverted. So I like to be behind the scenes. I don't like to be front and center. I don't want all the attention on me. And in my latter half of my career, before I jumped into Encircled, I had to start to embrace media and right. speaking in public for the brands that I was working for, you know, and doing big presentations. And so I started to get into it, and I was actually getting better and better at that and more comfortable, but nothing really throws you into a whole new level of discomfort than being either on your website, modeling your clothing, or on TV, talking about your clothing, or on a podcast, all these things where it's like all about you. And if you're one of these people who doesn't love to talk about yourself or show yourself on camera or whatever, it can be really uncomfortable. So I remember really having to do a lot of self-work, especially because I modeled most, I'm not on the website now very much. Like, I think I'm still in some of our older videos, but I used to model all of our clothing because I had nobody else. So I was like, this works perfectly. This is a model I can afford. So I did all the modeling, and that's not what I like to do. I'm not super comfortable on camera, but you know what, over the years I've had to get comfortable with it. And now, like, podcasts don't faze me. You know, I'd had a speaking gig at QuickBooks this past summer at their conference to like thousands of people. You know, I've been on live TV many times. That kind of stuff doesn't bother me, but I understand when you're starting a business, it's a very big shift to put yourself out front and center. And I do some business coaching for up and coming e-commerce companies. And oftentimes this is a big thing. Like, they don't want to be on social media. They don't want to show their face. They don't want to be the attention. And it's so difficult. But like, at the end of the day, I tell them, like, you are the differentiator. And like, mm-hmm. I'm still a differentiator for this brand, because, you know, you can definitely find another brand in Ontario that uses sustainable materials, that makes stuff in Toronto, maybe even similar looking products, but like, how are they positioned, and what is their voice and their brand like? And that usually comes from the person who started it. So I think it's important to be front and center, but it's definitely not where I started off in my comfort zone. Now I do TikToks all the time and I look like an idiot and I don't care.
Yeah.
And I kind of just do it. I do it knowing that it's like, I don't care. And I'm sure people out there, like my friends from, like, you know, corporate, are just like, what in the heck is she doing? Like,
right.
You know, they're at like board meetings for like, you know, Fortune 50 companies, and I'm out here on TikTok pointing at an article or something, or changing clothing. Like, it's just so weird, but it is what it is. This is my career now. So, you know, take it or leave it. If people don't want to see it, they can unfollow me. I don't care.
Exactly. And so, you know, that is, some of that comes with age, right? You slowly start to care less, or you actually understand what people say, what people mean when they say, just don't let it faze you, or it doesn't have to bother you if you don't let it, right? Because I think that is actually difficult, especially for women, you know, up to and including your 20s and into your 30s sometimes. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, we're societally programmed to care what people think. And then all of a sudden we're like, it's just like, don't sweat it. It's like, what the fuck? Like, how? Like, how am I just suddenly supposed to turn it off? Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talked about the inner work that you did in order to feel more comfortable sort of outwardly. And that's something I certainly focus on a lot in my coaching practice. Are you inclined to talk a little bit about what kind of inner work that you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, something that was really pivotal for me was actually doing, you know, it was right when I was still employed in corporate. So I did a photo shoot with the photographer in Toronto, Anna, who's a lovely Anna with Love on Instagram. And she, you know, I was doing new headshots for work, because I was living my split life. I needed new headshots for work. Right. I needed headshots for my coaching business, and I needed headshots for Encircled. So she did it all. Bless
Perfect.
Her with different outfits. You know, and she really showed me, because I've always felt very insecure in my body. I've never been like a person who, and it's not necessarily because I feel like I need to lose weight or something like that. I've just never felt like traditionally pretty, like by the definition of like whatever the world says that is, I guess. And so I've, as a consequence, I think I've told myself that on repeat. And so when I'm in photos, I'm always like super awkward looking. So I was just like, I can't take photos. I'm unphotogenic. So I had this story in my head, like you're unphotogenic and therefore you're not attractive and all this kind of stuff. And this photo shoot with her, she really took the time to show me like how to pose and put your arm this way and do this and da, da, da. And like, when I saw the photos, I was like, whoa, damn, I look good. Like, this is really good.
Oh, I love it.
And it gave me this, like, it sounds so silly and trivial. And like, you know, therapy, I think, is important too, by the way, but it gave me like,
just move how your hand is. Yeah. You feel comfortable.
Exactly. But it gave me this boost because I was like, wow, right. I look pretty good. So I started to feel a little bit more confident, and just like anything, like, you know, it's just a practice. You feel a little bit more confident, and then maybe, you know, you say nicer things to yourself, and then, you know, that kind of builds on itself, you know, one step after the other. And I think it's just, you know, some of it does come with age for sure. Cause I was very insecure in my 20s, even though I would probably come off like I was super secure, which is a very 20s thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
be out there and be wild and inside be dying. but now, yeah, for sure. I just embrace, like, this is who I am. This is where I'm at. Like, I'm fully on Instagram and crop tops. And I know people have very big opinions about that because I'm over 40 and you shouldn't be doing that. But like, if I want to do that, I'm going to do that. So if it bothers you again, you can unfollow me. It doesn't matter. Like, I think people should just embrace who they are as much as possible and just be totally unapologetic about it. I know that's super easy to say because other people's opinions are everywhere. But at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, like, you know, it's your life. These people are sitting in the stands watching your life. They're not actually participating in it. So they don't get to have like that, you know, front row opinion. You know, you only get to have that.
Yes.
So I think yes. That's really important to remember.
And they only get it if we give it to them, because frankly, right. They care a lot less than we think they do.
Yes.
Is the other thing, right? Like, you might be scrolling through Instagram and being like, oh, why is that person in a crop top? Although frankly, they're probably not, right? They're probably just like, yeah, or okay, whatever, moving on. Like, you know, the just like what you said, the stories that we tell ourselves about what people are going to think are more often than not wrong. Yeah. And I love that. And thank you for sharing that with us, because, you know, a lot of folks who are just getting started and trying to figure out what their voice is behind their brand, or how they're going to represent themselves, or how to talk about their business, to know that you can go from feeling really awkward, feeling very uncomfortable, to, you know, being a woman in your 40s in a crop top on TikTok and not giving a shit is really helpful to know that, like, all of, and you know, people will know this about me by now. I came from a similar thing where I was very awkward, felt very uncomfortable, felt very unattractive always, to now pointing, dancing. I don't dance as often, but I do a lot of goofy stuff. I wear costumes and I pretend to be my brain. So, and I don't care. Like, and I enjoy doing it. And I'm assuming you do too, because once you can actually get into it and find the fun in it, that makes a huge difference as well, not just internally for us, but for folks watching us, because we see that sort of ease and ability to be light and not take yourself too seriously that, you know, we really connect to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of joy in just embracing who you are, I think.
Yeah.
And being like, and some of it, like with social media too specifically, like it's a lot of testing. So like, I'm doing stuff to just see, like, you know, and some people are like, why did you do that? I'm like, I just want to see if this resonates with people. You know, maybe it doesn't, maybe it does. Who knows?
Yeah. Or it might resonate with a whole bunch of new people, and the other people who, you know, might be just like, what the heck's going on? But I always think of social media as building relationships, not necessarily, you know, just like getting out there and selling.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes it more fun. And I think it makes it actually easier to sell in the long run. Christy, thank you so much for being a guest today. I so appreciated you coming on and talking about, you know, how this all started for you, where it began, you know, the things that you're passionate about, what we can look for when we're trying to find better clothing choices for ourselves, and also just your vulnerability in sharing with us you know, how your journey of becoming visible and, you know, sort of letting go of what other folks think and just, yeah, enjoying ourselves, having fun when we can. And I was wondering if you could share with us how people can find you, because you do some coaching and you also are running Encircled. So where can we learn more?
Yeah, sure. So you can check out Encircled's collection at encircled.ca. That's encircled.ca. We're also on Instagram at encircled_. My Instagram is at Christy Sumer. You can also find my podcast, Brave and Boss. It's at christysumer.com as well. I do some e-commerce coaching and have some courses for e-commerce entrepreneurs specifically on there. And if you listen to this podcast, tag me on my story and I'll definitely share it out. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this and how it resonated with you. And thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much, Christy. That was such an interesting conversation. And I was so glad that Christy outlined for us some of the things that we can look for so that we can know whether or not brands are actually sustainable or if they are just greenwashing. I know that certainly we have a couple of local folks who are really great leaders in terms of sustainability in fashion, and one of them is Jessie Whale from Closet Candy and the other is Danielle McAllister from Rebellious Clove. I love following them on Instagram as well as Christy and the Encircled brand. My name is Megan Hamilton. I am your host, your editor, your music person. I have done all the different things for this podcast. It is a labor of love and I do love it. And if you also love it, please share, give us some stars, leave us some feedback. And by us, I really, truly do mean me. Have a wonderful week.